Agenda item number 11, report and possible discussion on fiscal year 2016 financial forecast by John Halls and Jim Forte.
Mr. Chairman, members of the board, this is the item we've been bringing to you all in April of each year as a very preliminary look of our budget process. Go ahead.
If you recall about time flies when you're having fun, but I think about 5 years ago, our process, we didn't do this. We didn't let y'all see what we were thinking about the budget and what we thought it was going to be and so forth. We had a director at the time says, why don't we have a second reading? In other words, why can't we get some kind of an insight before it comes time to vote here in July? And so this is really what this is. This is a very preliminary look at the future and what we think it's going to be. And if you have, after you get home and think about it, you say, well, I wonder what they're going to do about that. Drop us a card, send me an email, do whatever you need to do, but let us know where you can be involved in the process.
Yes, you have in your material, and by the way, there are two parts. I'll do the first part. As you saw in there, Jim's got a little bit of a longer range look at it. But in the first part of it that I'm looking at, which is the fiscal 16 budget, there's a couple of documents in your material. One is a five-year forecast. It's really the current year, 15, and then 5 years, 16 through 20, and then some assumptions. And that's what we're going to talk about for just a second, is a few of the assumptions that that we're utilizing in the development of this year's budget. On the revenue side, you'll see in a minute that the system rate has got really somewhat of a nominal increase for the next few years, and I'll explain why as we go through there in a minute. Not too much change in the non-system raw water part, some of our legacy contracts, if you will. Lake Ops we predict, of course, will go down as we do sell, anticipate the sale of some of our lease property at Possum Kingdom and stuff. And then our interest income, as you can see, we talked about the rates. We've got some very gradual expectations of rate increases of about 5 basis points for over the next 5 years or so that we build in for our reserves. On the expense side, what's currently in this particular model that you see is really a index rolling average. It's not the actual numbers. We're still very much in the process of developing the budget. The budget worksheets are being produced throughout the departments as we speak. They will be compiled over the next few weeks and months, and obviously the final budget recommendation will be brought to you, as Phil said, in July at the July meeting. But a couple of the items that are personnel related, and of course, obviously, our personnel is one of the largest pieces of our budget. On a staffing standpoint, on a staff size standpoint, we're anticipating at this point that there'll actually be a reduction of 2 full-time positions on a net basis. So actually the size of the organization, I think it's, you approved 256 full-time people, and I think right now it stands at 254 full-time people. There's a few ins and outs. There's a few additions. There's a few deletions. The net reduction is two people on a full-time position. You see no change on the part-time. On the recommendation of compensation increases for the next, again, for fiscal 16, ECI, which stands for Employment Cost Index, is a factor we use to determine what rate it needs for us to stay competitive in the marketplace throughout the whole organization. That's at 1.6%, so we're recommending a 1.6% across the board increase for fiscal 16. And then we're putting in a 3.5% performance-based pool. That will be distributed out to employees, again, on a performance base based on their performance criteria and performance reviews and things like that. So that's very comparable to what we had last year on a total. It's 5.1% total, and that was very close to what we had used in the current year that we're in right now. Possum Kingdom RSMU, again, this is our group that does our dam maintenance there at PK. It's an in-house group. We have been shifting the cost of those expenditures from capital. They've been capitalized expenditures in the past, and we've been slowly shifting them over to the operating budget, whereas a lot of their work is more maintenance-related, we believe, from an accounting standpoint. And so that actually puts it more in our operating budget, and that's just been a change we've been doing over time. This fiscal 16, we intend to complete that shift where it'll all be operating cost. And there's an implication on our system rate. It makes our system rate pay for that, which is appropriate because we're talking about maintenance of one of our largest reservoir. This is just, again, the detailed information is in your material. It shows more breakdown of the revenues and more breakdown of the expenses by department. But this just shows the summary. Again, the first column, of course, is the current year we're in right now, and it's sort of showing projected where we think we're going to be at the end of this year. And then 16 through 20, just to give you an idea. One of the things I might point out is that the revenue is going up. Oh, sorry, I didn't mean to hit that. Actually, this isn't a pointer. But if you look at the revenue, you can see how the revenue is going up, and that is as some of our legacy contracts will be transitioning over to system rate over the next few years. So we have some impact there. Expenses, obviously, are going up a little bit based on just some of the indexing I talked about, just anticipation and things. On the capital project side, that's down here about two-thirds of the way down. That's still very much in flux. We're still working on our capital project list and what we're going to do on a capital project side. You can see in fiscal 15, the current fiscal year, we're projecting to spend between $4 and $5 million this fiscal year. But then we certainly believe that's going to ramp up significantly in the next few years as we have more
capital. Yes. Projects.
Yes.
It looked like you had a pretty big number in it last year. It's not on this year, but
yes.
And then we did not spend it, or we have not spent it, so we were going to have a big surplus, but that's not reflected.
Well, you're exactly right. We budgeted about $18 million in capital project spend in 15, and we're going to spend about four of it.
Right.
A lot of that's going to get deferred. It's going to get deferred out into 16. And in fact, the numbers in 16, 17 might end up being a little higher than they are right there, that what we're seeing. We just don't have that done yet, so I don't have the latest numbers, but they will be higher in the next few years. And just like we were talking about, as Phil was alluding to, what's going to happen is, even though you'll see that our system rate, let me go forward to the next slide real quick, and you'll see, whereas the projected system rate increases, just as we're looking at right now, are very nominal. You can see I've just plugged in basically a dollar increase in each of the next 3 or 4 years. But when you get out to 20, you see all of a sudden it's a bigger jump. It may be higher than that on some of those other years too. As our capital costs go up, we may very well have to borrow more money and have debt service. And so it's very likely that our system rate may begin to ramp up higher than that sooner. And certainly, as Phil alluded to, it's going to ramp up significantly in the out years. As Allen's Creek begins to kick in and other supply projects kick in, 70 or...
Go back to the other slide. What was interesting to me was that you're showing that our ending reserves have gone down to really, really little numbers. However, with the capital projects not matching, it would seem that we wouldn't have those ending reserves down that low. And besides, doesn't it affect your ability to borrow money if you get your ending reserves that low?
Yes, we certainly are sensitive to the reserves. That's what I was saying. If you look on here, you see bond proceeds down there in the lower item where we've just, right now, again, plugged in $10 million for 2019 and 20. If the project costs, the capital project costs go higher than that 12, that 10, that 8 that you see right there, we're probably going to have to borrow some money in 16, maybe not 16, but 17 and 18 and things like that. So we'll probably have more borrowing, which will actually, to keep our reserves at an adequate level. I mean, we believe that even though there's not all that's actually required in our reserves policy is to have a working capital reserve, which is only about, well, I say only, it's maybe $7 or $8 million. Okay, mm-hmm. That's our minimum. We're not going to ever, I mean, in my opinion, that's not prudent to get anywhere down that low.
Right.
We're going to try to stay, and our plan is to stay up at least to the 15 to closer to the $20 million mark as far as the minimum balances of our reserves, because we feel like that's the most prudent point, and also that's well received by our bond, just like you were by the bond rating agencies and things like that. So
required, you mean required statutorily or
good credit from the bond market?
Well, actually, the board, the reserves policy that this board adopted has a working capital reserve is one of the reserve elements in there. And that's 90 days of working capital. And that's the number I was alluding to, which is $7 to $8 million right now. That's really the floor. That's the absolute minimum. There is we have a self-insurance reserve number, which is less than $1 million. It's a fairly minor number. The rest of them are discretionary. They're contingency reserves and rate stabilization reserve that we also maintain. And we do have a repair and replacement reserve we also have, which is about $4 or $5 million. That's actually a restricted, that's required by our bond covenants. Okay, so that's really a restricted fund. It's not even in this number. So you can think about in a way that we've got another $4 or $5 million in addition to those numbers right there that are in a restricted fund for repair and replacement types of things for our that's required in our bond covenants. So that's the only thing that's required. But again, as a practical matter, a reserve closer to 15 to 20 million is probably more than likely what we'll be at. And we will manage, you know, our borrowing in the future to meet that.
What kind of debt coverage ratio do we borrow at when we do issue bonds?
One point, the bond covenant actually requires a 1.1% covenant. The board approved several years ago, before I was here actually, I believe, the board approved a 1.3, a more conservative, to give us even more thing. That is a very well received by the rating agencies and stuff, and helps us with our rate setting when we get interest rates and we're going out to borrow. So we use a 1.3% coverage ratio is what we build in. In fact, you'll see in the next
Thank
one,
you
can see the very last line down there. Now, we're higher than that in 15 in the current year because our projections show we're going to have some surplus. We're going to have a higher surplus in 15 than we budgeted for. We actually budget for 1.3. It's where we set our rates to achieve 1.3. But anyway, our projected system rate increase, you can see, are very nominal. Again, one of the main reasons that's going to be the case for the next couple of years is that we do have a couple of legacy contracts with the utility industry that are going to migrate over to system rate, and that will raise our revenues, our system water revenues up, and they'll be paying a lot more money, those contracts from a revenue standpoint in fiscal 16 and 17 and off.
And again, we are a nonprofit, and I get that. I think I have to be careful on how I think sometimes, but isn't there an argument that we would increase our, I think I brought this up again last year, that we should increase our rate even more, like a couple of dollars, or what we're doing for employees, 5%, 5.1% on an year after year basis?
Yes. Well, exactly.
Not necessarily
tied
to employment.
We've talked about this before. The problem we've got as a public entity is that we can't raise our rates really any more than our budget really calls for us to raise our rates. From my standpoint, standing before customer meetings in summer, when we're talking about the people that are paying those rates, they're not all that interested in paying a higher rate for us to put money in our reserves.
To build
stuff. In
fact,
most taxpayers are not too interested in governments paying any sort of higher rates and fees or taxes so that the government can store their money for them for future
well,
use.
I'm just looking at it as instead of the curve being so steep later, we will be there later, but you're right. They don't want it sitting in the reserve. They'd rather it happens.
And we're looking at that. And this rate, when we get finished, it's possible. This is just preliminary. It could be a little bit higher than that, even in the next year stuff. We'll have a much better look in a couple of months when we, as we finish our budget, and we'll look at that.
Okay.
We're well aware that we've got a very low rate right now. We enjoy that because, to be quite honest with you, our facilities, our dam facilities are older facilities. Their cost for the most part has been spent, but as you saw from David Collinsworth, there's going to be a significant amount of expenditures that are coming up on those facilities to maintain those. So yes, the rates will go up, and yes, we'll absolutely work to maintain a reasonable increase structure on those rates as they do so. Any other questions on that? I'll turn it over to Jim. Oh, well, I'm sorry. I didn't finish my... This was just summary. This is just showing the projected how, again, you create the rate as a function of whatever you need in your system water requirement. You divide it by the number of contracted units of long-term acre feet, and that's what creates your rate. But that's currently what it is proposed to be. We'll see as we bring back the budget. I'll turn it over to you.
And let me follow on with what... John was just trying to talk about, and Beck Bruhn did about half of my first part of my presentation for me. We're developing the 2016 state water plan. We know it's going to look different than the 2011 plan. Some of the things that we're looking at is new projects, and some of those projects moving forward on the calendar and on the schedule, and then revised costing that occurs every 5 years as they change the engineering cost. Again, Beck mentioned the initially prepared plans are going to be published in May, and we use so much of the projects that are included in those plans to forecast what our future rates are, that it is a little premature for us to be doing a lot of work, especially on the long-range financial planning stuff. But again, we bring the budget back to you in July, and at that time we'll have a lot better feel for the long-range plan as well, because we'll have the IPP and some other things working. This is from last year's presentation, and just to point out that over the planning horizon, we've got about $1.2 billion worth of projects, the majority of it, a little over $1 billion in new water projects. And again, the fact that these are out here loaded up, that may change in the new water plan, and we're just waiting to see how that evolves. This is a chart that talks about the legacy contracts that John was just mentioning and the transition, and you can see we're here in 2015, 2016, and we've got about 80,000 acre feet of contracts that we have with utility companies essentially to finance the construction of two of our reservoirs. They're expiring over 2016, 2017, and they are converting to the system rate. 80,000 acre feet at our system rate right now is about $5 million more revenue, and that's, that helps to contribute to keeping that rate fairly flat. Again, you saw this again last year, Director Tesh, the coverage that we were talking about. This is what we call our dashboard, and these are the output panels from our long-range financial plan. And the thing that we always do is we solve back to a 1.3 coverage on any of our analysis. This right here in 2020, 21, 22 represents Allen's Creek. And you can see how it influences the rates. The rates start kicking up there. We're going to dispatch a little bit of cash. That's the blue bars. Also probably issue some bonds. That's the red bars. And you can see that there's a lot of interaction between how our reserves happen. With a 1.3 times coverage, that means that for every $1 million in debt service, we have $1.3 million in net income. Once you pay that debt service payment, you've got $300,000 that goes right back into your reserves. So that policy that the board adopted back several years ago contributes to the maintenance of our reserves. Again, we'll have more information when we come back to you in July for your board meeting, we can answer any questions, hopefully, that you have now. Again, so much of our information is preliminary at this point that it's hard to tie anything down.
Jim, you're looking forward well down the road in a lot of these estimates here. And I know your report there from the water planning people was for a drought from 11 to 15. But what happens if some of these long-range hydrologists, like people I read about in the local papers, because we're closer to Austin than we are to other places down there in Bell County, some of those folks are reporting and being recorded in the paper to make us have the idea that we're on the first few years of a 20-year drought. If something like that actually turns out to be correct, I guess California will turn into a desert. And what will that do to the BRA? Anybody looking at that kind of long-term?
I'll defer to Brad. He's more on the consequence side than the planning side.
There are a lot of people that are looking at that. You know, irrespective of what your feelings are on climate change, is, you know, if something is going on and we have less water in the future than we have in the past, how does that impact us, and what do we need to do? For us here at BRA, what it means is that the system of reservoirs that we've contracted against for the firm yield will no longer be able to supply that water through a repeat of the drought of record. And we saw a little bit of a glimpse of that at Lake Proctor from 1998 to 2001, where we did have a new drought of record. And in that instance, we went back to all the customers that we had at Lake Proctor. I think there were four, maybe five, and we have three of those customers left today, and we had to renegotiate their contracts. So, by 30%. So, you know, we reevaluated the firm yield of Lake Proctor, and it went down from about 18,000 down to 13,000 acre feet per year, and which was that 30%. And so we ended up having to renegotiate those contracts. And so, there are a lot of people that are studying this. The Corps of Engineers and USGS are involved in an effort, particularly in the Upper Brazos. So a bunch of entities are monitoring it. I don't think that there's any conclusive evidence that anything conclusive or firm has happened yet or needs to happen, but that's what would likely happen if in the event that, you know, we find ourselves 10 years from now and things are still going along the way that they have the last five.
To what degree do we live in a supply and demand world? If water really becomes significantly in shortage, does that mean the price is going to go way up?
Yeah, and I think, you know, the part of what's going to drive that price up is a lot of these projects that take forever can't take forever anymore. And we're going to, you know, I don't know how it's going to happen. Phil uses the terminology significant emotional event, but, you know, when some city like, Waco or Round Rock or whoever it may be really literally runs out of water, that's going to change the way people think, and that's going to have an impact on the cost and the timing and all of that.
I can tell you from experience, if you don't have water, your rates go up 60%.
I mean, I think Abilene's a great example of that. Look at the amount of money that Abilene is just all of a sudden having to spend $90 million on the company that is, A, not going to rain, B, they're going to have water. I mean, they're probably running out of water. So spending that kind of money and impacting their rates in the very short term, you'll start seeing more of that.
Come to Mineral
Wells, and I'll show you.
Find themselves in a drought. I mean, that's the problem with the drought. You never know what it's going to be. So how do you manage your resources around?
The projects, it's amazing. It's $500 million. And then you start seeing what's going on with the price of your water. It's going to go up one time, two times, three times, four times, five times more, especially if you have to go to desal. And that's going to be big.
And that's why you're starting to see a lot of interest in what are more or less called drought tolerant or drought resistant strategies like aquifer storage and recharge and Gulf of Mexico desal and those types of things. The thing about it is the more advanced you get from a technology standpoint, the more expensive the water is going to be that you extract from that that technology.
Planners 4 or 5 years ago never
anticipated that we'd have a drought like we're going through right now. Just wasn't on the horizon.
Any more questions? Seeing none.